Hi, this is Acorn Canada Radio, where radio meets justice. I'm Rachel Scott, office organizer at Toronto Acorn. I'm here with East York Acorn co-chair and National Fair Banking spokesperson Donna Borden. We're joined also with Mike Sullivan, former member of the House of Commons representing Toronto's York Southwestern riding. Today we've got a great interview as part of a documentary Mike is putting together. Mike will be interviewing Donna about our fair banking campaign and push to better regulate predatory lenders in Canada. So hope you're happy to join us. Tune in.
Okay, my name is Donna Borden and I'm an Acorn member and we're in the Acorn office at Greenland and
Danforth. Perfect. So, Acorn has got a campaign going on the scourge of payday lenders.
Yes.
In Canada for low-income people. Can you talk about that?
It's our fair banking campaign. So it's not just Acorn's been fighting for many, many years against the payday lenders, and we've gotten some serious regulations against them, but they're still there. And we would like to see them go, completely leave. The problem is we want to make sure there's an alternative for people to go to. So we started our fair banking campaign, which includes we want banking for all. Some people go to the payday lenders because they can't cash checks, because they can't have access to a banking account. So we want bank accounts for everyone. We want to see a database for everyone, like so that when someone does take out a loan, it's registered with the government so that they can't keep rolling over loans. That's what the payday lenders. They still do it. They're not supposed to, but they roll them over from one place and just send them across the street to the place across the street. So they're not supposed to, because their systems aren't integrated. So if we had a database, that would be helpful. We like to see the NSF fees being lowered to $10 a month. Right now, someone bounces a check for $10, so $45 from the NSF fee. It's just cheaper for them to go and pay the lenders and borrow the money. Even though at $15 per hundred, it's just cheaper for them. We'd like to see so that people can get overdraft, maybe even $100 a month. So that way they wouldn't have to worry about going in to pay their lenders. What else are we looking for? Can I just use my cheat sheet here for a minute, sir? And we're looking for the banks we want the whole predatory lending strategy, which includes all of this, we want to see regulations on the installment loan companies. There's no regulations on the installment loan companies. And we think that the database and these stricter regulations, people being able to go to banks will help them stop them taking out these predatory mortgages that they do, it includes rent to own for furniture, the car dealerships, they take out loans, so we're fighting for all of this. So
that's pretty big.
Yes, it is, yes.
Thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking at one of the payday loan sheets that I saw, mm-hmm. and essentially it looks like the interest rate for the first 30 days is something like 400%.
Yes.
How is that legal?
Well, this is what we fought for, to have it. We want it to lower the criminal interest rate to 60%. We'd like to see it lowered to 30%. That's part of our banking campaign. But when we fought for the regulations, the government decided that they would let them bypass the criminal interest, and then they got to, so they, by charging the $15, and they lowered the fees. There's more details to that, but so they basically got away with charging more than the criminal interest rate. It was more than 60%.
And the government's okay with this?
They are.
Wow. And so people are in this trap where if they have an expense that, they're living month to month on ODSP or an OW or even on a minimum wage job, and the dog gets sick and they got to go to the vet.
Mm-hmm.
They have to turn to a payday lender.
And they just think, oh, it's just $15 per hundred. But they don't realize it's $15 per hundred, and then you only have 2 weeks to pay it back. So if you borrow $300, and you know, $15 for $300, and they call me too, they'll say on the side, oh, come on, it's only $20 for the first $300 for the first time customers. So they call you, and you go in there, and then if you don't pay it back in 2 weeks, then you have to, and you have to pay it back now. They can't roll over the loans. They used to just roll it into a new loan and more fees and more. But now they'll say, well, they can't do it because it's against the rules. Now they'll say, we'll go across the street, borrow the money. So then you're going across the street, you're paying all the fees, all the regulations, all the fees. You come back, you pay them off.
Oh, so you're just going from payday lender to payday lender.
You know, some people get three and four payday lenders that they're got on the go because they can't pay them off. They're just going from store to store. And sometimes it's the same place. It might be the same, absolutely the same company.
So it is, I noticed that in the little town of Weston where I live,
mm-hmm.
We used to have 9 different bank branches in within about a kilometer,
mm-hmm.
and all but 2 have now left.
Mm-hmm.
But in their place, sometimes there's 13 payday lenders.
Yes.
So there's clearly a demand for this service. Why mm-hmm. aren't the banks doing it? Why is this being?
The banks used to. They're not, I don't, it just seems like they're more, they don't want to do anything for people of low income. It doesn't seem like they want to provide the services. Like they just like provide service to, and the banks are investing a lot of these payday lenders as well.
Really?
Yeah, they're investing them, yeah.
So they're complicit.
Yes, for sure, definitely. And with the payday lenders too, we notice that with a lot of them, it's like, that's why we fought through the city for regulations to limit the amount of payday lenders that come in. So that what happens is, what was happening with one with like Easy Financial is an installment loan company. One of the payday lenders was put out of business. They went bankrupt because they were breaking the rules. And they just swooped right in and took over all the locations. So they used the same staff, they have the same clientele, they offer more money. So we wanted to fight that minimum distance. And then now they have agreed, now they're going to limit it how many payday lenders are in the city. Now I think the details are still working on the details. So that would be great, because what will happen is if one of these payday lenders close, then somebody else can't come in their place.
But there's 13 already. I mean, clearly.
Yeah, that's true. No. Well,
how are we going to limit that?
We know there's a reason why they're doing that. That's where the database, I think, would help. Because once you take out a loan from one place, you can't take out another loan until that loan's paid off. The database will stop you from rolling the loans, so they have to give you the time to pay off your loan.
Gotcha. Okay. Are there any other campaigns we should know about?
With the bank, we got our internet for all, fair access. If everyone should have access to the internet.
Don't they?
They don't. No, they don't. It's not. There's a lot of kids that are behind or and don't have the same access because it's really expensive. I find it expensive even for me. And I just find that it's just out of control. So we have a campaign where we're pushing for $10 a month for internet for people with low and moderate income. Rogers has offered something for people just in TCHC that's subsidized. So a lot of them don't know about it, but we're trying to push so that everyone has access to it.
So a basic internet service for $10
yes.
a month.
Yes.
Sounds reasonable.
Yeah, I think so.
Certainly, the government should be supporting this because
absolutely,
the government
yeah.
Has told everybody that if you want access to government services, you have to go on the internet. They've stopped
mm-hmm.
The call centers. The call centers have blocked, so you can't use a phone to
mm-hmm.
reach employment insurance or Canada Pension
mm-hmm.
or Ontario Works. So you need to have an internet access, so.
You do, for sure. And a lot of things we have too with the internet access, there's also like a lot of, with the mail. People, now we have to wait for a form to come. It could take,
excuse me, okay, go ahead.
You could wait 2 or 3 weeks for a form to come in, the mail, because just to fill out for anything. Like before we used to be able to go like just to the post office if we have like our student loans, we can't do any of that now. And everything has to be, you have to do it online. Everything has to be online. You have to have codes, you have to have passwords, you have to have, and a lot of people just don't have access to it. So
it used to be
without.
The federal government used to have a community access program.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the City of Toronto libraries had access to this money, mm-hmm. where there was federal government money to allow people access to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That disappeared with the Harper government. If the government is saying everybody has to have access to the internet to access government services, shouldn't the government be paying for the internet?
They should.
And have they offered?
No, they haven't.
Have we asked? Has Acorn?
We've met with various folks, and they agree with us that it's a, in fact, didn't the COTC say that it's an essential service? It's an essential, service almost in every country, so it's an essential service. They've declared it's an essential service, so why can't people have access? Or I have areas, buildings or people where they can get Wi-Fi or apartment buildings, but they don't provide that service. They tell you to go to the library, kids can go to the library.
Well, the libraries aren't open 24/7. So you can only go in there when the library is open.
Yes. And it's, you're in the lineup. And you can only use it for a half hour of time if the child's doing, you know.
Really?
You have a limit that you can use it. So if the child's doing homework, they can't do it. So, and even the schools are saying, well, just, you go home and you have to look it up on the internet. They don't have encyclopedias anymore. Everything is looking on the internet now.
It's true. It's true
that
it's...
You can do everything on the internet now.
But without internet access, families are not able to access a lot of government services.
No, they're not. No.
Any
people
other?
It's people just give up. They stop trying. They don't.
Can we pause?
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm gonna edit this anyway.
Yeah.
Or it's gonna mess up a radio thing. Well, I guess she can clip this too. But did you tell them about the Minister of Innovation? Well, we met with them, and he said, "No, I 100% believe the internet's a right." And then they came out with a program, and the program is $10 a month for parents. So you have low-income parents who qualify for the national child care benefit.
That's right.
The ones who have received the maximum amount, when they roll out the program, they'll be able to access $10 a month internet, which is a big step. All the providers are offering it except for Eastlink. And but it's not if you're single, and low-income, you're like SOL.
But so there was an announcement. So can we?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the announcement that the Minister of Innovation just made?
There was an announcement that it was for $10 a month, and it would go for parents through child tax benefit. People have child tax benefit, so they would determine, and then they would get access to $10 a month access. So everyone was offering it. All the service providers would offer the $10 a month. So it hasn't been rolled out yet. So the information hasn't, not all the details have come out yet. So that's a step. It's a start.
It's a great start.
Yeah. Then we can get and just lower the internet fees for everyone else.
We do pay some of the highest communications costs in the developed world.
Yes.
Are there any other? My issue, and I don't know if you know enough about it, is the carbon taxes that are coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you folks have a campaign on that or whether there's.
Well, we do. We kind of started, like, provincially. We were trying to pressure the, on our provincial platform, we were pressuring the provincial government with the revenue from the cap and trade to create programs for low-income people.
Uh-huh.
So...
It didn't happen.
Yeah, and now we haven't done
it yet. Right. So, are you planning anything more?
Well... Provincially, we have. We're kind of waiting for the dust to settle before we move forward. Yeah. Well, they killed the program, right? Cap and trade's been canceled, right?
Soon.
So maybe we need to talk about maybe like going federal.
Yeah.
Like, and so we did. You know, thanks to a briefing paper that Mike provided, we talked about it, but we haven't really like launched and done anything. But it would be something that like. We would definitely like think about and want to do.
Okay, so I'll go and ask you to tell me, I'm setting you up for this, that when the provincial Liberals instituted the cap and trade program, did Acorn ask for anything?
We did. We asked for some, the funding that came from there, the The revenue that came from there. We asked for the revenue that came from there to use for programs for low income.
And did they do that?
They said they would get back to us and let us know. So no, and now it's been canceled. So yeah.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Can I just mention,
sure.
I forgot to mention about our banking campaign. One of the things that we were talking about was alternatives, like we were talking about maybe postal banking would be a solution.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe even the, so that people, like the, some of the small towns or some of the areas, they'll have payday lenders, but they don't have banks. But there's always post offices everywhere you go.
Right.
So we were saying, alternatively, people keep asking Acorn, like, why don't you want, for these payday lenders to just go away? And we said, we'd like them, but we know that people have to use them. So we don't want to take that service away from people. We want to be able to provide them with something. So we'd like to see something like payday lenders or like others, something other like the postal banking, so that people, it can provide its taxpayers' dollars, and it can provide the services to people for a low rate, and maybe provide these to small ones.
Sorry, someone's cringing.
Okay.
That's okay. We heard it. Mike.
Right, okay.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Is that good,
yeah.
Mike?
Yeah.
Or you want anything
Excellent.
Else?
No, that's great.
I mean, I imagine.
Because that's essentially backs up what Peter said.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Peter said the same thing about cap and trade, that they asked the provincial government to put something in for low income people, and
yeah.
They said no. So you're just confirming.
They really they sent up the green on, they sent up a lot of stuff, and then it was inside,
wasn't specifically for low income.
No, and we even met with the green on people, and well, what are you going to do about low income tenants?
Yeah.
And they're like, that's a very interesting thought, you know?
Still have to meet with these people, we still have to meet with these other people.
Right.
We have to meet with them, and then blah, blah, blah.
But federally, I mean, we actually, federally, at not the most recent board meeting, but the one before that, we're talking about,
right.
You know, moving forward on that federal program, so.
So Trudeau actually must have been listening. The letter we wrote.
Yeah.
Because he, in a speech about carbon taxes in March, said we do have to look out for low-income people.
Yeah.
Right.
They haven't done anything about it.
Right. Yeah.
But he, at least it's on his radar. So we just need to keep.
Yeah, I mean,
this is the biggest tax since the GST, right?
Yeah, we might. It's new real estate. We need to
And the GST had a rebate system.
I mean, if you're back into wanting to volunteer and you want to write a letter, and throw it through the board.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we can always we can launch that into an online campaign and send out an email to all our contacts across the country to target their MPs.
Well, and here in Ontario, the cap and trade system was kind of a mystery.
Right.
Right? It was how is this costing me money? I have no way of knowing, except that the natural gas companies put a line on the bill saying carbon tax, and it was 2 cents a
right.
It was a tiny amount, but they did apparently put that on people's bills, so they knew they were paying a tax, even though it wasn't a tax. It was just
an
additional portion that was part of cap and trade that was for the distributors, so natural gas companies and fuel oil companies and gasoline companies had to pay into the fund.
But don't they tell you what they do with this fund? Don't they tell you how much money they get in?
Yeah, they got about $2 billion.
Well, they would do it through the auctions.
Yeah, they would auction
sell
the,
off.
The permits, right?
Yeah.
So, because people needed permits to be able to go above their caps. So, they
would
sell the permits, and then they would lower the caps every year. That was the plan. And, it's going to be the mystery is gone. It's just going to be a tax. Trudeau's going to institute a tax January 1.
Yeah.
Of $20 a ton. And so.
When does it start?
January 1st. $20 January 1st, 2019. 2020 is $30. 2021 is $40. 2022 is $50.
Yeah, we should really get back on that.
Yeah.
So, and then is it going to be the same four provinces that have their own programs on top of that?
Yes.
And it doesn't matter whether.
If a province has a program like cap and trade, they don't impose the tax.
Oh, I see. So the feds are like, well, how? Okay, now I understand.
So that's why Nova Scotia rushed to get a program. They didn't want the feds instituting a tax.
Yeah.
All the maritime provinces have got some kind of program. All that was left was Saskatchewan and Manitoba, both of whom said, we're not playing ball. They were both quasi-conservative provinces.
Right.
And now that Ford's been elected, he's going to force Trudeau to put a tax on every Ontarian of $20 a ton, which will work out to about 6 cents a liter on the at the gas pump.
Right.
Well,
so,
I thought he was
going
to lower everyone's tax.
Oh, he's going to lower that tax and then force the feds to look to raise their other tax, right? So it's all about making Justin into the enemy for the federal election in 2019.
Right.
That's
what scares me is he was talking about like just removing rent control altogether, and now he's not even gonna remove the cost of the minimum wage.
That's what
scares me. That he's gonna really.
Yeah, we didn't talk about
destroy
minimum wage.
Right, well, yeah.
He's like our version of, like, our Trump. Trump, but he's not orange.
It's only he's blonde.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, we can dye his hair.
Right.
I don't know if she has to turn that off.
She's really good. Rachel! Oh.
Thanks for tuning in. This has been Mike Sullivan, former member of the House of Commons, interviewing Acorn Canada spokesperson on the Fair Banking campaign, Donna Borden. I'm Rachel Scott from Toronto Acorn, and thanks for tuning in to Acorn Canada Radio, where radio meets justice.
This program is produced by the Arkansas Broadcasting Foundation, KABF-FM in Little Rock, Arkansas, and is distributed through Affiliated Media Foundation Movement, AMFM, serving the needs and interests of low and moderate income Americans.